I will now call to order the Tuesday, May 15th meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Committee. Representative Freiberg, have you had a chance to review the minutes from our previous meeting of May 7th and be willing to move them?
I did. They look great, and I would be happy to move the minutes.
Representative Freiberg moves the minutes from the May 7th meeting. Any corrections? Seeing none, hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Before we get started, I want to call a special recognition to the people who have been working hard for us this week, who will be continuing to work hard for us this week. Our pages are here with us today in committee, so thank you for being here with us and seeing how the process works. And with that, I will move House File 4488 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. We do have the bill's chief author here, Representative O'Neill. Welcome to the committee. If you will tell us about House File 4488 and what you'd like to do with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So these are the final two contracts, except for the law enforcement contract, which hasn't come in yet. But the final two that are before us before the legislature, because we did pass the large contracts. There were several in that bill, and it went to the governor. He already signed it into law. These are the Minnesota State College and Minnesota State University system, so the two-year and four-year faculty. And I actually have Greg Hubinger here from Nonpartisan Research and the LCC to come and talk about the details of the bill.
Would you like me to refer to Mr. Hubinger at this time? Good morning, Mr. Hubinger. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hippinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. As Representative O'Neill indicated, these are two of the last three contracts for this biennium. These contracts are for this biennium, and the contracts by their terms are retroactive to July 1st of 2017. The first contract is with the Minnesota State College faculty. These are the faculty for the two-year colleges and technical colleges. There are about 4,200 faculty that are represented by this bargaining unit. Under the terms of the contract, faculty would receive an across-the-board increase of 1.6% effective July 1st of 2017 and a 2.4% increase effective July 1st of 2018. Under this contract, these faculty will not receive step increases, which is not the same as what was provided in the other contracts that were ratified earlier. They will receive a career step under this contract. This is a step that they'll receive after their 15th year. There were some non-monetary benefits that were also negotiated. One was an early notice provision that provides an incentive of $2,000 for faculty who give a notice. This assists the Minnesota State in their planning. And then there was some new language that provides for or consolidates some provisions regarding layoff between the technical college and the community college faculty. Minnesota State estimates that the cost of this contract will be about 2.6% in this biennium and will have an impact of about 4.27% on the next biennium. This is somewhat less than the average of the other contracts. The second contract is for the Minnesota State University Association of Administrative and Service Faculty, a mouthful. These are the admissions and financial aid and housing faculty at Minnesota State. There are about 775 faculty represented in this contract. The across the boards are similar, a 1.6% effective July 1st of 17 and a 2.4% effective July of 18. And again, they will not receive step increases. There is a new provision for career steps at the 17th year. Minnesota State estimates that the impact of this contract on this biennium is about 2.5% with a 3.9% impact on the 2021 biennium. Mr. Chair, that's a quick summary.
Mr. Huber, just a couple of quick questions. The 1.6, 2.4 that you're referencing, and you talk about them across the board, is that also referred to as total package increases, or is that across the pay grid?
That's across the pay grid. All faculty will receive those increases.
Okay. And Representative O'Neill, I'm not sure if this is for you or for Mr. Hubinger, but I know that there has been some concern in the past with contracts and there being funding available within the current budgets for these. Can you speak, either of you speak to that issue? I realize it's not a finance committee, but it will be a question I'm sure that will be asked. I'm just kind of being preemptive on that here this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have someone here from Minnesota State that could talk about the negotiations process and how they worked within the budget parameters that they were given by the legislature.
Representative O'Neill, might be appropriate to have them come down because I guess I'm sure that given past history and questions on that, that would be something that this group would like to know as well as others along the way. So. Good morning, sir, and welcome. If you'd identify yourself for the record, and I can repeat the question if you need me to, or otherwise just proceed.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Christopher Dale. I'm the Senior System Director for Labor Relations for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I think I remember your question. It was concerning the affordability of these settlements within the current biennial budget, and we believe these are affordable within the current biennial budget.
Thank you, sir. Members, questions for Mr. Hubinger, Mr. Dale, Representative O'Neill? Is there anyone else present who would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 4488? Anyone else present today that would like to testify on House File 4488? Certain contracts be considered by the committee this morning. Seeing none, hearing none. Representative O'Neill, we will give you the final word.
Thank you. I would just add into the record also about the cost, the total new money cost would be for the Minnesota State University group, which is 775 faculty. It's a $3.3 million of an increase. And for the Minnesota State two-year faculty, which is about 4,261, it's $21.4 million of additional new money, which they just testified to that they could afford.
Seeing no other questions from members, and thank you for the setup, Representative O'Neill, I will renew my motion that House File 4488 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. You are on your way with part one of your day, Representative O'Neill. And we are also going to have a short informational hearing on House File 3497, which also happens to be Representative O'Neill's bill. And I will move House File 3497 before the committee. This is an informational-only hearing. The committee will not be asked to take any action relative to the bill before us of House File 3497. With that, Representative O'Neill, if you want to background the committee on the bill before us, we'd appreciate that. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So last session we talked quite a bit about, just in the whole legislature, about small cell technology rolling out, and we had the four cell phone providers be a part of a large negotiation process with the cities and with the cable companies and came to an agreement. And in so doing, we've had a lot of small cell rollout. So this is another bill related to cell phone service. And what's become very apparent as they've been rolling out, infrastructure throughout Minnesota, is that the application fees for the macro cells, so not the small cells, but the macro cells that go on water towers and go on other towers, have been, let's just say, widely varying across the state of Minnesota. And I actually have a couple testifiers here to talk about how widely varying they have been. And in some places, it's been an incredible burden upon the cell phone providers to actually put up additional infrastructure on these the cell towers and the water towers. So this bill would propose that a $3,000 cap would be put on the application fee, including third-party contractor fee. And as the testimony goes along, you'll see that really the crux of it isn't so much the application fee, which is paying for the administrative costs happening within the local unit of government, but really it's the third-party contractor fees that are assessed. It's almost like a blank check, members. It's just really, really difficult to kind of pinpoint where this cost is coming from, and it varies so widely. So I have a couple testifiers to talk about this third-party contractor cost and how it's just funneled right through, passed right through the local government onto the cell phone providers that are trying to give us better infrastructure. And members, we have a lot of conversation here about broadband, and this certainly is some of the answer to the broadband in rural Minnesota. So we want to make sure that we have an environment here in Minnesota, in a regulatory environment, that is conducive to putting up additional infrastructure so that we can have high-speed cell phone service across the state. And with that, I'd like to turn over to the testifiers to give you more information about some of these fees that have been quite excessive.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill, and we'll go to your first testifier. Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Neill, members of the committee. My name is Dan Leary, and I'm the Director of State Government Relations at T-Mobile. And I'm here in support of House File 3497. This legislation will help make it possible for wireless carriers to better offer high-speed wireless broadband service across the state of Minnesota in a cost-effective manner. Wireless usage in the state and across the country has grown exponentially in recent years. Your constituents have become reliant on their phones for far more than just making phone calls. Data traffic flowing across the wireless networks has increased by more than 25 times since 2010, and it's expected to grow by fivefold by 2022. In addition to consumers' personal data consumption, communities have become increasingly reliant on wireless carriers to protect the health and safety of their residents. In 2016, over 260 million 911 calls were placed in the U.S., and 70% of those calls came from wireless devices. Due to the demand, wireless carriers such as T-Mobile have been dramatically increasing our investment across the country in our networks. In Minnesota alone, T-Mobile has increased our investment by 74% from 2016 to 2017. We fully intend to continue improving our network in the state, and this will include the highly anticipated 5G technology. In last year, T-Mobile spent $8 billion at the FCC's spectrum auction to buy what's known as 600 megahertz spectrum. This spectrum travels much farther than standard spectrum, and it's designed to better cover rural areas smaller towns in Minnesota and across the country. However, there's a significant impediment that wireless carriers encounter when we go to build out our networks. That impediment is exceptionally high application fees in a small number of jurisdictions. Often the large portion of that fee goes to cover the cost of third-party consultants. Before submitting an application for a facility, a wireless carrier goes through an extensive process to ensure the integrity and safety of an installation. The process begins with an analysis of the need for a wireless facility by our radio frequency engineers. Once they determine a site is needed, a site acquisition specialist will locate a viable piece of property to place the antennas at the proper height. Local zoning regulations often require that we go to municipal-owned property. And a lease will be negotiated with the municipality with a variety of indemnifications and protections against loss, damage, or injury to the municipality. A lease will always indemnify the municipality for damage to its property, injury to its workers, and surrounding property. There is no risk to the municipality for any loss or damage to its property. The site must also meet the standards set by an alphabet soup of state and federal agencies, such as the FCC and the FAA. The wireless carriers will have its structural engineers design an installation that both protects the municipal facility as well as the carrier's equipment, which is also worth tens of thousands of dollars. Up to this point, the investment that we have in a site is predictable and something that we can forecast. And that cost is similar from Mankato to Moorhead. In the case of a water tower, for instance, there's only a handful of common water tower designs, such as the golf tee or the beer can style water tower. There's only a smaller number of companies that actually manufacture water towers, such as Chicago Bridge and Iron Company. Our engineers have designed thousands of these types of safe, efficient installations across the country. Then we submit the application to the municipality. At this point, some local governments, retain the services of third-party consultants. The wireless carrier must cover whatever cost the consultants charge, including often their travel expenses from their out-of-state locations. The application fees can range from $500 to $5,000 to $20,000 for the consultants to reproduce the work that our engineers have already produced. House File 3497 will cap these application fees at $3,000. This is what was done in Iowa in 2015. They capped their fees at $3,000. In 2013, Missouri capped their fees at $1,500. Our experience in Iowa, as well as what municipalities that we have worked with across the state of Minnesota, have led us to conclude that a cap of $3,000 would not substantively impact a large number of Minnesota municipalities. Most could still use third-party consultants should they choose. It would only restrain a small number where we find the fees of consultants to be excessive. Minnesota deserves to have the best technology available and quality high-speed broadband wireless coverage throughout the state. This legislation will encourage wireless investment, promote economic growth, and prepare your communities for the next wave of wireless technology. Wireless customers in Minnesota, your constituents, are demanding high-speed wireless broadband technology. Now is the time to ensure that their needs are met. I thank you for your time, and I hope that you will consider House File 3497.
Thank Mr. Leary, thank you for your testimony. We have one member question at this time, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill, for your work on this. And I actually was contacted by Verizon to bring some small cell wireless to my buildings in Lakeville, and I was really excited about it. And then, for some reason, the lead went cold. And then I see a letter from the city of Lakeville. And I just wanted to, I presume you've seen this letter, but, and so I just would like to hear your response to that. Thank you.
Mr. Leary, do you have a copy of the letter that Representative Peterson is referencing?
I'm sorry, I do not, I guess. I did not.
We will get you a copy of that letter.
Should I go
Coyle,
on that?
Do you have a copy of that, or if you're the appropriate person to respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, I'll do my testimony, and Mr. Leary then can read the letter, and then he'll be able to respond.
That will work. Representative Peterson, is that all right? Give Mr. Leary a chance to review that. Mr. Coyle will provide his testimony in the manner of efficiency here.
Yeah.
Mr. Coyle, if you identify yourself for the record, proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee staff, my name is Peter Coyle. I'm a lawyer lobbyist for Larkin Hoffman, and I've represented T-Mobile in its various iterations since 1996. And in that role, I've handled hundreds of applications for them around the state of Minnesota, in cities big and small, including counties. One thing was clear when this process rolled out back in the 90s into the 2000s is that cities and counties figured out that there's money in wireless. And they found out that there's money in the leases, which they very often drive these facilities to through their ordinances, and they also figured out that there's money in fees. And frankly, we want the cities to have the resources, which is the wireless facilities, and we want them to have the technical capability to evaluate these applications. And that this bill is not trying to fundamentally affect any of that. What we do object to, though, is the lack of accountability for how the accountants are used and the expenses that they impose on the wireless carriers, which we have no choice but to pay. In a normal arm's-length transaction where we might be negotiating to put facilities on a private building, we'd have input into who the consultants are that are used, and if there's a price to be paid, we'd have input into that too. But in a municipal or another public site, the carriers design the ordinances. The cities or the counties design the ordinances. They provide the leases that we must execute, and they also pick the consultants, and we have no role in that process. And at the end of the day, we simply have to pay the fees that those consultants pass on. We think that that's an unfair and inappropriate structure, and our hope is that with this bill, there's an opportunity to make a change there, and we appreciate the opportunity for your hearing it today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. Mr. Leary, have you had a chance to review the letter and able to respond to Representative Peterson's question?
Proceed. Sure. The purpose of the bill, again, is to give us some sort of predictability. And it is not our intention for a municipality to have to eat any costs. And if there's some sort of unusual design or some factor which would require fees that are exceptionally high, I think that we would be interested and willing to include language in the bill that would account for that. But as I mentioned before, fees can range anywhere from in the hundreds of dollars to $20,000. If we're looking at building out in the state of Minnesota and we want to sit back and say next year we're going to allocate X amount of dollars and this is what we can do, we really have no idea how far that money is going to go because we don't know what we're going to be charged for these consultant fees. So predictability for our investment is what we're looking for. And so I don't take issue with what's said in this letter, and there may be certain circumstances where something would beyond $3,000 would be required. Our experience and that what we've seen in Iowa and throughout Minnesota is that $3,000 seems to be a fair number, but we would certainly be willing to hear out other
Representative Peterson follow up.
Representative Grant.
Oh, Representative Fenton will be fifth on the list at this point.
Okay.
So.
Well, maybe later.
Mr. Chair, may I respond just slightly?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I wish I had this printed out and handed to you, but just to understand the third-party contractor fees, there's, you know, there's three or four in the state that charge excessively high fees. You know, everything the testifier just talked about, some of the fees are a couple $100s, but you also have, like, in New Ulm, their consultant charges $20,000 for essentially the same work. And you have to understand, too, that this is the second time that this engineering is done, because the cell phone providers don't want their equipment up there and it's going to fall off or damage where they're putting it. These are very expensive pieces of equipment. So you have to understand that engineering has already been done once, and now the city is requiring a second whole set of engineering to put this up on this structure. Again, the fees can be from a couple $100s to $20,000. You add up $20,000 over and over and over again, and we're going to lose the ability to put this infrastructure out and do broadband across Minnesota. So this is a real impediment to building out the cell service and broadband across greater Minnesota. There's, you know, I have a list right here, and there's literally three third-party contractors, engineering firms, that are kind of making it difficult to provide infrastructure, and the cell phone providers have zero say in what that amount is passed through to them. It's a blank check. I mean, these consultants can charge whatever they want, and they are. They absolutely are charging whatever they want in excess of what it really takes to put this structure up. So I just want you to understand the difference. There's already engineering being done once. The municipalities and counties are requiring a second engineering, and that third-party consultant is charging whatever they want, and I think that that's a problem.
Representative Firebrick, followed by Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I don't know who this question is best directed to, maybe the bill author. The $3,000 figure seems essentially arbitrary. I'm just wondering how that was arrived at.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg. So it is arbitrary in the sense that it could be any number, but I think the better conversation is these pass-through consultant fees that are the problem. And we can change the bill. This is just an informational hearing. You know, so we're going to work on the bill when we leave here and work on it, obviously, in the interim, and work on it to bring it back next year. But what I would say about the $3,000 is those caps, there's two states that have already put caps, and one is Iowa's already put a $3,000 cap, and Missouri put a $1,500 cap. So there's precedents across the state, but I'm not saying that that's a perfect number, and maybe it isn't, but it's a starting place, and I think that we need to have the conversation about these third-party contractor fees and what we're doing to the infrastructure in Minnesota, that if you want broadband across Minnesota, if you want high-speed cell phone service, this is an impediment to that being provided.
Representative Ivers, follow-ups?
Well, I guess just a comment. I mean, you know, one provision of the bill says that the fee has to be limited to the actual cost incurred. I'm like, okay, fine. But then it just imposes this arbitrary $3,000 cap. I mean, we see in the letter from Lakeville that the evaluation cost can be $6,000. City of Bloomington says they can be $4,000 to $7,000. I mean, I don't, you know, cities do have an interest in making sure these things are properly placed and fit into their plans, and to me, it doesn't seem appropriate to just make them eat the cost of ensuring that if the inspection cost goes up to $7,000. So,
very good. Representative Joaquin, followed by Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this answer probably would go to Mr. Coyle. Mr. Coyle, I know you're here representing T-Mobile, so you just speak for them. But you mentioned before that some of the areas you're on public buildings and some private buildings. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me the percentage of areas T-Mobile towers are on public buildings?
Mr. Coyle.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Uakim, that's a question that I am not prepared to answer, unfortunately. My own experience is it's a lot. But whether it's half or less or more, do you have any idea, Dan, based on your experience?
Mr. Leary.
Well, we could get you an answer to that question.
Mr. Leary, do you have any information on
I don't any more than Pete does. I mean, it's all I would say is that, again, a number of municipalities either steer you to their property or and we're not necessarily have a problem with that, that they do so, but it is pretty common that they will steer you to a water tower or municipal property.
Representative Joaquin, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this one might be for Mr. Leary. I know in your testimony earlier you did mention that in some cases $3,000 may not actually address the cost issues Is that true?
Mr. Leary.
I can certainly conceive of some unusual. What I tried to stress in my testimony was that most water towers, there's a handful of water tower designs, and there's only a couple of companies that build those. However, there are some that would be outside of that norm, and I think that we would definitely want to address that. It is not our desire to make a municipality eat any costs that they, you know, that it should be our cost. It's only when it's a common sort of cookie-cutter type thing that's being done that the cost should be $20,000 to do that.
Representative Joaquin, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can understand that. It sounds like there's a lot of frustration right now with the third parties that are addressing the contractual issues and the engineering. And I get that. You know, actually, that's what capitalism is. You seem to be happy with that in other areas. But, Representative O'Neill, I know that you want to really try to address this issue, and we really do need to make sure that people across the state have the services that they need. But, like folks have been saying, I think that $3,000 might be an arbitrary number, and I know you're willing to work on it. What, by capping this, another concern I have, and if you thought about this, that you mentioned there's some contracting companies that charge a lot more than others. Is that accurate?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Joaquin. Yes, there are literally three that I can see on my list that have been charging excessive fees. I'm not going to name them unless you really want me to put it on the record, but I don't want to say who they are exactly. But, you know, in the cities of New Ulm and the city of St. Louis Park, St. Louis Park charges $14,000. Oakdale charges almost $14,000. Invergrove Heights charges $13,000. City of Hutchinson is just under $13,000. City of Champlin is $12,500. And these are just the third-party contractor fees. And those cities I just named, those are three different engineering firms. But as I go down the list, those three names are appearing over and over and over again across the state.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that cities are, their main goal is to protect their citizens and their infrastructure, and that's important. I worry that by capping this also that you are artificially driving out companies and driving people to maybe contractors that the cell phone towers would prefer to deal with. Sometimes the bottom dollar isn't the best bang for your buck, so maybe as you move this through the process, since it's just an informational hearing, you can look at that too, because despite what the testifiers are saying about cookie cutter, each of our cities are very unique, and so are their facilities and infrastructure and their water towers. And water towers are an extremely expensive investment that a city does. So we have to be very protective of those. So just something to think about.
Representative Nelson, followed by Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the questions I have are along the same line. While I think a $20,000 fee might be excessive for inspection, I don't know what's involved in that without doing more further study in it. But it's if we and Mr. O'Leary talked about not wanting to throw costs on the city that should be their cost, but this kind of looks like an unfunded mandate to the cities. If we're only going to let you charge $3,000 total, and the cost of inspection is more than that, we're basically making the cities pay for costs that should be borne by the contractor that's wanting to put the equipment on the machine or the buildings. So I'm gonna have some concerns about that. That's, you know, by capping it at $3,000, and I know Representative O'Neill, you said you were willing to work on it, but it's a matter of we don't want to be putting costs onto the cities and saying you can't charge for those costs. I mean, on the other hand, we also have ordinances out there that you can't charge fees in excess of what it costs to provide a service, and we've had that issue in the past with some cities charging excessive building fees when they do the building fees for code inspections and whatnot, and we've had issues with that in the past. But I think there's got to be a balance here. But that's we don't want to be putting costs on our cities either that should be borne by the contractors coming in wanting to put their equipment up, and then having the local taxpayers have to fund that cost. So more of a statement than a question.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Tice, followed by Representative Fenton. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not really sure who these questions will be to, but first of all, when a city gets a request to work with one of the companies, do they put it out for an RFP, or do they just pick a company and go from there?
Which of you would like to answer that question? Representative O'Neill?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tice. So there's no RFP. It's the city just decides which engineering firm is going to do it, and they do it.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill. So what I'm hearing is that there already has been the engineering done, so this is on top of the original engineering. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tice. Yes, so the cell phone provider comes in, and they do their own engineering. And then the city requires that engineering to basically be done again, and they can pick whichever consultant that they want. And sometimes they pick reasonable consultants, and sometimes they pick consultants that charge $20,000 for their service instead of a couple hundred dollars. So, yes, this is being done twice.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative O'Neill. So when this – does the city get a copy of that engineering part of it, the study or whoever they've had come in to do the consulting – does the city receive a copy of that?
Representative O'Neill.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Tice, yes. They receive a copy of everything. They have all of the engineering from a cell phone provider that wants to come in and put it up. Again, these are thousands of dollars of infrastructure, and they're not going to want to put it somewhere where it's going to fall off or cause damage to what they're putting it on. It's not in their best interest. So they have engineering that's done once, and then the city has an engineer that comes and does it again.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Neill, so is this done for each request, or is it just done one time, or do they do it for each company that comes in and requests to have?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tice, it's for each company that comes in.
Representative Tice, follow up.
I just think this sounds like, yeah, there's no reason to do this, and I'm really glad you brought it forward. I could see doing it one time, maybe. But if they're receiving the information already, there's no reason to do this repetitiously for each request. So I'm really glad that you did bring this forward. The city should be able to absolutely do it under $3,000 if that's what it is. It just sounds like we're doing a lot of work for somebody, and we really don't need to be doing that. So thank you very much.
Representative Fenton, followed by Representative Kwan. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Neill, did you mention where these engineering firms are from? Like, are these out-of-state engineering firms? Are they from here in Minnesota?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They're local. They're here in Minnesota.
Representative Fenton.
Well, I just want to say, you know, thank you for bringing this forward. I want to say there was an issue raised a few years ago that we'd heard something about in this committee with the city of Duluth and some enormous engineering contract fees is related. So I do agree. I think when there is such a range that cities are paying, that gets passed on to the consumers, which are those living in the city. So I'm glad we're having this informational hearing on this issue. Thank you.
Representative Kwan, followed by Representative Peterson. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, a lot of this seems reminiscent of the 5G discussion we had in committee, and some of it seems reminiscent of the water tower painting those engineering things. Informationally, it'd be nice if staff could look at what regulations there are, with contracting and similar things for cities, you know, the nepotism, graft, kickbacks, that type of regulations that we can watch out for. And then I think the author would be nice if you looked at some way of doing repetitive engineering as templates so that a lot of this is the same old, and we charge you the, you know, X amount of dollars. I think excessive is sort of a mild term for $20,000 to do the engineering on some of this stuff. But if we were intelligent and wanted to help promote this technology, we would say we would have a process to where you could have the engineering work done. Maybe the firm that did it gets a doubling of the fee, but that becomes a template that can be used for all of the water towers that were built by the same company between X year and X year. And then it becomes a $50 or some nominal charge. And my goodness, what are we after here? We're after getting the best technology and service to our customers and our citizens, depending on whose person is talking. And the best way to do that is to be intelligent and not reinvent the wheel and charge premium prices. So I look forward to a mature and wonderful bill coming to us. I look forward to some information of what's existing to prevent bad behaviors. And if we see some gaps, I also look forward to assisting the author in trying to prevent bad people from doing bad things. Thank you.
Next member question is from Representative Peterson, followed by Representative Bliss. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, again, I'm kind of also sort of going along the line of it looks like we're doing engineering twice. So how can we maybe develop a process that we only have to do it once? So I would recommend looking at potentially having a agreed-upon engineering, whether it needs to be your in-house engineering that you're using or through a third party, but that the provider has a little bit of a say in who that is, and so there's a motivation to keep those prices competitive instead of like, well, we're going to make this other person pay for whatever you want. You know, you really lose that competitive edge when basically the person who's paying doesn't have any choices. So that would be one suggestion I'd make to you. And because, you know, the city of Lakeville has 60,000 residents in their community, and they don't have staff that is, as I said, that's qualified to do this type of work, it would seem that since they don't have anyone in-house, that it will be outsourced. And so sort of along the lines of creating a template of what the engineering standards would be, so that if it is being done in-house, you could utilize that and then have a third party check or something like that, that could be a little bit cheaper to keep those costs down.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for pointing that out, Representative Pearson, because that is done in some cities. So some cities will have a cell phone provider do the heavy engineering, the complete engineering, and then they might hire someone to just sort of check that. And that's where you have a couple hundred dollars worth of fees. But when you have complete engineering done twice, and there is no one checking to see how much they're charging, and there's no checks and balances. Right. It's just a blank check. Charge whatever you want, because we're going to pass it on. We don't care. That's where you end up with $20,000, where it could be a couple hundred dollars. So, yes, so there are some cases where it's more complex. I understand that. And maybe it's more than a few hundred dollars. Maybe it's a couple thousand dollars. But it's certainly, I'm not sure that it's prudent to use $20,000 of it's going to be paid by the consumer or the taxpayer if we do it twice. So, yes, and that is something that we have been talking about, Representative, so I appreciate you bringing that forward.
I have two other member questions on here, and we still have four other people who probably are going to be able to maybe provide some feedback for a common theme that I'm hearing from the committee, costs of engineering, replication, duplication of services that are going to be from some city and or engineering groups. So with that, I will take Representative Bliss, followed by Representative Mason, then I would like to bring the other four testifiers up. I do believe Representative O'Neill, that would conclude your testifiers on this. Am I correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So Representative Bliss, followed by Representative Mason. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a question for the testifiers. You do the engineering up front and present that to the cities, and then the ones that hire the engineering firms, is it common that the engineering firms design something substantially different than you've already submitted, or is it just very similar? Has it ever happened that they found a major flaw in your engineering?
Mr. O'Leary, Mr. Coyle, Representative O'Neill. Mr. Coyle.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a fair question. For the most part, because of the commonality of the water tower design and the manufacturing source, it's basically redoing the work that was submitted to prove it out, essentially. Have there been instances where a mistake is made? Sure, I'm not going to suggest that's not the case. And we obviously want to protect the cities in this instance from that circumstance. But I would say that's the exception, not the norm.
Representative, let's follow up.
Nope, I'm good.
Mr. O'Leary, did you want to comment? You don't need to, but just checking.
There's just one thing I wanted to mention that I said in my testimony, but we also have a lease for anything that we do, and there's multiple assurances for us to indemnify the property of the local government that we're going on within the lease that is not does not have to be addressed necessarily in an application. And so just want to make that clear that there's also that kind of protection out there as well.
And with that, Representative Mason, you have the final question on this round before I bring up the next set of testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, it's a caution to some of the comments that I'm hearing from some of our members that I think are extremely condescending and maybe insulting. We have some very intelligent people that have served on city councils, and I guess the question I do have for the testifiers is how many installations do you usually have per city?
Mr. Lee and Mr. Coyle, any comment from your client's perspective or your company's perspective?
I mean, that would vary dramatically depending on the size of the population of the city and the geography of the city. You know, I'm originally from Winona, and it's with the bluffs down there, the amount of antennas that we would need to cover Winona would be a lot different than somewhere out in the flatter area of the state. So it's really, I can't really give you a good answer, Representative.
Representative Mason,
okay,
follow-up.
Thank you. Just typically, like I'll pick a city of 60,000, and I'll use Egan because we have some hills, et cetera. So there are spots where it's really difficult to get coverage. So how would that impact? Are we talking 2 or are we talking 20?
Mr. Coyle.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, I've actually worked on a number of applications in your fair city, and I would say it's north of a dozen. And it's not so much based on population, although population drives demand and capacity, but it's topography as well, importantly, as you note. So that's really the variable, and I would say Egan is an example of a city that decided if we have a water tower that's available, if we have another public structure that's available for use, they've really pushed hard to have the carriers make use of them. And the carriers will make use of them because often it's an easier path to approval, but it comes with a price. But if you go down to Lakeville, if you go to Duluth, you know, it varies by the topography and it varies by the kind of the spread of the city in terms of the scope of coverage. So there's no one-size-fits-all in terms of the number of sites that you might need.
Thank you.
Mr. Coyle, to that final point, I would suspect that that also is going to be factors that need to be considered would be other structures that are in the community, the different connections and the relay towers and repeaters and different things that might be a part of that equipment. And no one community, no cookie cutter, one size fits all. I suspect there has to be some individual design. You could have river valleys. You could have other kinds of things that could create some problems. Steel structures could also create some problems. Just mentioning a few things that I'm aware of from the community that I'm from. So,
fair point.
With that, I'm going to invite Ms. Burkquam, if I'm pronouncing that name correct, and Ms. Ziegler to come forward. They'll be our next two testifiers. Ms. Burkquam, am I saying that correct?
Yes, thank you.
Great.
Mr.
Good
Chair.
Morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll identify yourself and proceed with your testimony this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jennifer Burkquam. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. We represent all 87 counties in the state. I also represent a group of county staff called the Planning and Zoning Administrators. They call themselves MCPISA. And I don't know that these situations arise in counties very often, but if they do, the Planning and Zoning Administrators would typically be working through the permitting process. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We do oppose House File 3497. This bill limits the ability of counties to recover costs for providing services to wireless providers, and it sets a very concerning precedent. We don't believe this is necessary because state statute already requires that if counties set fees, there must be a reasonable relation between the fee and the cost of providing the service. I guess a lot of the discussion today, I didn't hear a lot of examples of this happening in counties, and I just want to let the previous testifiers know that we would be very happy, the Association of Minnesota Counties, to work with wireless providers and counties if there are concerns, and we can maybe address some of the costs, like on an individual basis, rather than passing this broad legislation that would set a cap at $3,000. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any member questions this point. We'll have you stand by in case some do come forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Ms. Ziegler? Good morning. If you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Ziegler. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. We represent over 830 cities across the state. And as it was already mentioned, the city will recall there were substantial conversations about wireless technology last year, and that resulted in significant changes to telecom law. And so there was an understanding and expectation in the interim that there would not be wireless legislation pushed for this year. And so I do want to thank the chair and the author for hearing this bill on an informational basis only today. So as introduced, as you would expect from the conversation so far, we are opposed to House File 3497. When a wireless carrier comes to a city seeking to install their antennas typically on publicly owned infrastructure such as a water tower, the city's responsibility is to determine the safety of attaching that antenna to the structure. In almost all cases, as you probably gather from your conversation, cities utilize an outside firm. That's very typical. They use them as their city engineers. We have maybe one or two cities that have a structural engineer on staff. So in almost all cases, they are using these third-party contractors. As the previous testifier stated to the bill, that $3,000 cap, he mentioned that most of the time, you know, it's under that $3,000, and that's true, but you do have those cases where it is going to exceed that $3,000 mark. And so while it was stated that they don't want the city to eat the cost, we would under this legislation. Anything in excess of that $3,000 of difference would fall upon the city to cover that cost. So we can appreciate that they're not questioning our ability to utilize these local firms. It's, as Representative O'Neill stated too, it's more about what they're getting billed for. And so I have Deb Heiser here from the City of St. Louis Park. She's an engineer. And we've been talking a lot about what goes into that review and possible duplication. But I would be willing to bet I could go around this room this morning and ask each and every one of you what your cell phone bill is, and we probably all pay a different amount for that cell phone. And that could vary for a variety of reasons. It could be the number of lines that you have. It could be whether you have unlimited data. There's a variety of reasons, and that may be oversimplifying it, but we need to talk about the factors that go into that review to talk about these varying costs and why they exceed that arbitrary cap that was noted at $3,000. And so I'm going to hand it off to Ms. Heiser, Mr. Chair, and we'll be here for any questions.
Ms. Ziegler, before we do that, members, questions for Ms. Ziegler. Seeing none and hearing none, Ms. Heiser, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and who you represent, and present your testimony.
Wonderful. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Deborah Heiser. I am the engineering director for the City of St. Louis Park, and I'm representing the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. The City Engineers Association represents, we've got about 144 cities that are a part of this theme, the city engineers. I want to just provide kind of context to what we're talking about here. First and foremost, if these fees were capped at $3,000, it's very arbitrary. When you look at our water towers, there is no one-size-fits-all. Sure, there's a dozen different designs, whatever that case may be, but there's a lot of different ages, a lot of different wear and tear that happens on those towers. And as a steward of the public trust, that's what we do. city engineers, public works directors. Our main focus, as my mayor used to say, is drink, drive, and flush. So we need to make sure that we have a reliable water source. We need to make sure that we can provide those services to our residents. A water tower, $2.5 million. They're about 50 years. Different wear and tear, different elements cause damage and wear and tear on those structures. And how things get connected, that water tower may have five other antennas on it. We have three water towers in St. Louis Park, and there's antennas at different levels. There's antennas on there. And from a perspective of attaching new equipment, when we get a design from a consulting firm, from the industry, we don't have the ability in-house to even review that design. I am not a structural engineer. I build roads. I build pathways. I build sidewalks. I don't even build bridges. We hire people to do those things. We hire people for those expertise. Wind loads. What is the skin on the water tower like? Is it bolts? Is it welding? How is this going to affect the other antennas on the water tower? So we're talking about QA/QC here. We're talking about quality control, quality assurance. Measure twice, cut once. We want to make sure that that water tower isn't damaged. We want to make sure that we can provide uninterrupted water for our residents. That's what this is about. So there's been some conversation about third party. Again, as Laura had alluded to, over half of those cities do not have a staff engineer, and they have contracts with for just kind of retainer to go to council meetings, those sorts of things. A lot of times these permit application reviews are extra, are above and beyond that. And these are contracts that can last, depending on the city council. I think one of the members had mentioned city councils, every city is unique. Depending on the city council, those can be a 3-year contract with that consultant or 5-year contract with that consultant. And it's, you know, we have to be responsive to our constituents, responsive to the people who come in and make application. So at the end of the day, $3,000 will probably likely cause the city to have to eat this cost. Not all the time, but that review, we don't want to charge more than it actually costs. As a matter of fact, you know, we try to collect fees commensurate with the actual cost. We're not in the business of making money at cities. So with that, I'll close my remarks, and if you have any questions, let me know.
Well, we can honor your request. There are 3 members that have questions for you. So with that, we'll start with Representative Bliss, followed by Representative Jessup. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I asked the previous testifier if there was ever any mistakes made on the engineering, and he said that sometimes there was. As an engineer and then these consultants that some of the companies hire, $14,000 we've heard for some of the costs, or $20,000, and some just charge a couple $100 for a review. What's the difference in price? Are the cities that are charging $100, are they being negligent to their voters because they're not doing a complete review, or are the company or are the cities that are hiring these outside firms that charge the $20,000, are they being overly cautious? I guess my question is, why do we need a complete engineering redesign or review versus just a check or a review of the submitted design? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Ms. Heiser.
Chair, just as a quick response, and I'm going to just repeat what I heard. What I heard you say is, are cities who are charging less than $20,000 not being good stewards of the public trust? I don't know the particular. I've not seen the different charges. I don't know the circumstances. The bottom line on it is that we're expected in St. Louis Park, and a lot of cities are expected to make sure that we're protecting those assets. And mistakes are made. There's a case in, Big Lake, where, just simply by having a weld versus a bolt, they can cause fires and things like that. And so mistakes do get made. As far as review, I don't know what those cities that are only charging $100 are doing. They're certainly not having that QA/QC. That would be not where I would recommend as the city engineer to go. I'm not saying they're being irresponsible. They're doing what they need to do. If it's $20,000, we're not completely redesigning these things. There's probably some error in the calculations, or there's something with the tower itself from a structural perspective. I can only infer that for those higher costs.
Representative, let's follow up.
To the bill author, you said that some cities were pretty standard on excessive costs, $15,000. You listed off a list of numbers and cities. Is that just one permit that was that high, or was it pretty much the standard that they charge?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bliss. I'm actually going to go back to...
Phone a friend.
Well, they put together the information, so I just want to make sure that I'm accurate in giving you the information.
Mr. Coyle, you could identify yourself again and then answer the question. Right. Representative Bliss, be happy to repeat it if you didn't catch it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the information that we have supplied to Representative O'Neill represents, I'll say, random applications, so single applications in given cities. It's not intended to be an average across a given city. We're trying to show a range.
Okay. All right. With that, Representative Jessup, followed by Representative Joaquin. Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. This is a question for Ms. Ziegler. Last year, there was quite a great discussion and compromise, I will say, of coming together to form an agreement regarding the small wireless towers throughout the state. And I thought that was a huge accomplishment because I know the two sides were far apart. So my question is as you look at this potential opportunity to really try and come together once again, do you see any issues that would be greater than your past experience that you just had last year for some compromise, some work together to be able to come again to the legislature next year with a solution that will work for all?
Ms. Ziegler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think we're all still processing. Last year we had extensive conversations last year, so I don't, even just the length of the bill itself, it's front and back, whereas we were dealing with multiple pages of Chapter 237 last year. So obviously the scope is much smaller. It's a fairly, it's fairly straightforward what this legislation would do. But as I mentioned in my previous comments, it's no one's questioning our ability to utilize these firms, and we appreciate that. There was some question last year with respect to third-party contractors, so we had some similar conversations along those lines. And so while we can appreciate that fact, I don't know that we necessarily agree on the problem, but can we talk about other accountability measures? I'm not a structural engineer. I'm not going to pretend to know what goes into a structural engineering review. And so I also feel that we need to balance the expertise of those individuals and those firms that cities are utilizing in those instances. So it's a balance.
Representative Jeff, a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick comment, and I would just encourage collaboration once again that occurred as last year. I think your example of what work got accomplished last year was terrific, and I hope you use that kind of as a reference as you go forward on this particular issue. And I think you also have two other benchmarks which we've heard of today, and that is the work that's been done in two other states, Missouri being a cap of 1,500, Iowa being a cap of 3,000. I look and I say, is Minnesota that different relative to Iowa or Missouri? I would have trouble to try and figure that out. Other than we're colder, but I would say Missouri and possibly even Iowa go through more wind issues and certainly tornadoes than perhaps we do. So I would hope that there would be an opportunity to work through this and come up with a collaborative solution. And clearly, if there are exceptions by which a cap is not the appropriate standard for some work, then I would hope that both sides would come together and establish a process for exceptions. Thank you.
And Representative Ms. Ziegler, did you want to comment on his comment?
Mr. Chair, if I could, thank
Certainly.
You. And Representative, just because the two other states, their legislation was mentioned, I have not read it in its entirety, but I at least am aware of it. And so I do want to note, at least in the Iowa case, I believe it was also a conversation with small cell. And so it's not necessarily apples to apples because we have a special telecom law now that specifically refers to small cell technology, and it doesn't apply to these macro sites. So I do want to make it clear that these agreements with the macro sites have been going on since the 90s. So part of the impetus last year was that small cell was an emerging technology and the market had not been set, and they needed some certainty there, whereas these agreements have been literally going on for decades in cities. And part of what we're seeing is because of the emerging technology, cities realize these are mutually beneficial agreements. They understand the benefits that they have to the city and their residents, which is why they've been doing it for almost 30 years, whereas small cells, that was not the case. That was emerging. So I just want to make that distinction with both the technology as well as with the other state legislation. It does make it difficult because we have a very special law here in Minnesota.
And before I go to Representative Joaquim, who is our last question at this point, Mr. Huser, we'll have you queue up if you are going to testify, and anyone else who's interested in testifying will have you queue up here as well, and we'll work you in. Representative Joaquim, I still believe that she has questions for the two of you. I'm just kind of getting the next stage set here for the next scene. Representative Joaquim, to your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, quick comment. Two states doesn't make a trend out of 50, and I'm really concerned about what we're trying to actually solve with this issue, because it sounds like the frustration really is with third-party contractors, so I'm having a hard time understanding why we want to handcuff our cities then. And I just wanted to actually, the question is going to be for Ms. Heiser. Now, first, I want to thank her for being here today, and thank you for mentioning quality control and quality insurance. And as a daughter and a granddaughter of two people that are carpenters and love to work with wood, the measure twice, cut once is right up there, especially when it comes to making sure that we're maintaining our structures. I know there's been a lot of talk about the telecom companies coming forward with an engineering spec. And I know from being on a city council for 9 years what our main purpose is, to protect and serve the public interest and public trust and safety of our constituents. Would you think it would be responsible for a city to just blindly trust the engineering stats coming in from the entity that's trying to put something on your public infrastructure?
Ms. Heiser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquim. No, I don't want to. I take my job very seriously. I know what I do is, it makes a difference every day. I know what I do is important to everybody in the city of St. Louis Park and drives through the city of St. Louis Park. We need to make sure that we provide them reliable service. A lot of people don't even think about where their water comes from or what happens when they flush their toilets. But that's because we're stewards, and we do watch over that. So I do believe that we need to have that quality control. We do need to have that review to ensure that our big asset, that $3 million tower, is going to remain in service and stay full of water so that the pressure works.
Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you for that, because I know you mentioned St. Louis Park has three water towers. Could you tell me how many antennas on each of those? But I also know you also have antennas on other public and private buildings in the city, so I won't ask you about those.
Yeah.
But on the water towers, you did mention that is the one thing that is not cookie cutter, that each city is different. Each water tower can be different with their age, the wear and tear, how many antennas that you're trying to link into what's already existing. It just doesn't seem to lend to a cookie-cutter approach.
And
Ms. Heiser, a lot to answer in that question.
Yeah, I know, Mr. Chair, Member Murakim. From my perspective, I don't know exactly how many. I do know that we have tower antennas on all of our towers. They're at different heights, and you can see them. They match pretty good, but you can definitely see them. So from our perspective, I don't know the exact number. So I apologize for that.
Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that just kind of highlights the fact that each water tower in each city is unique. Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Mason.
Thank you. I'd like to make one more comment. When I was on the city council, I often wondered if the legislators understood the impact of what they were doing, and this bill, to me, is a bill that should not be here. We're trying to regulate something that really doesn't have to be regulated. When I was on the city council, we obviously wanted to get the best coverage for our constituents. I mean, in today's society, coverage is important. But you also have to be very careful where you're placing the equipment. And I can tell you, and probably Mr. Coyle can tell you, there are times when they want to put some a tower in a park. And I can tell you the residents go bonkers when you try to, when they see applications. So it's something that is very, very sensitive. And why we're trying to regulate something at the state that really belongs at the city is beyond me.
Representative Mason, I don't mean this to be a cutting statement, but you're right. People will grab their cell phone and call if they don't like seeing the cell tower in the park. And that is a commentary on the society that we live in. And with that, Mr. Huser.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Steve Huser. I represent Metro Cities. Metro Cities represents city interests in the 7-county metro area. As all of my concerns have been touched on by Ms. Ziegler and Ms. Heiser, I'll keep it very brief. I just want to get Metro Cities on the record as saying we do oppose this legislation. We're very thankful that this was an informational hearing this year, and we look forward to working with the bill author, as I'm sure that this is just the start of a conversation and definitely not the end of it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, Representative O'Neill, we will give you the final word. If there is no other public testimony, see no one else coming to the testifying table, Representative O'Neill, we will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the informational hearing, and yes, this is a starting place, not an ending place. There's a long ways to go, but I wanted to get on the record some of these concerns, and really as it relates to broadband across the state of Minnesota and high-speed cell phone service, which everybody wants. But this is a true and real impediment to that infrastructure being built out. And so I think it's relevant, and I appreciate your time, and we will work on this in the interim and bring you back a great bill that everyone will love next year. Thank you.
Well, Representative O'Neill, if you need a task force, you see Mr. Galvin. He's wonderful about having that deal with task force. And members, with that, my thanks. We are adjourned.